Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to WIMS, Women of Wisdom, everyone. Today, I'm honored to have a very unique experience that has happened not only to me, but to another family in Washington, in Philadelphia. It was in Philadelphia. And what happened was one of the sites that I follow happened to pick up this story from the Washington Post about the Pope. And the Pope stopped on a tarmac, an airport tarmac, to greet a young man with their palsy. Well, it turns out the Washington Post picked it up, and I am happy to have the reporter with me in my virtual studio today who actually captured that moment. And so that is why this interview today is so spur of the moment, because when I send these interviews out, I don't know if they're going to get back to me or not. So I'm honored to have Julia on with me, and we're going to talk about cerebral palsy and the Pope. How does that sound? Cerebral palsy and the Pope. I like that. And so I'll bring Julia on and let her take it away.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate this honor, so on me too. And so my first question that I asked all my guests, then we'll get to the article per se, is why did you start working for the Washington Post, and why did you start doing balloons on the side? I love that. A Washington Post reporter who does balloons on the side for kids. That's how I found your email address. I'm like, this is a match made in heaven because I teach kids. So why did you do what you did for that article, and why did you do what you did for, to begin with, why did you start working for the Washington Post, and why did you go out and do this article that particular day in that particular moment?
Well, I have to say I've been making balloons a lot longer than I've been reporting. I started that back when I was about 8 years old. But as a reporter, as an adult, the things that always draw me the most are the stories that are about individuals and how people live their lives and how people relate to each other. And that moment, I was covering the Pope's visit to the U.S. for 4 days. I was covering his trip to New York and then his trip to Philadelphia. And out of those 4 days, I talked to many, many people who just had really moving personal stories about why they had decided to come out to line up and try to see the Pope, or why they had come to the city where he was. All these very human stories. And probably the one that stood out the most to me was this family, the Keating family, who brought their 10-year-old son, Michael, who has cerebral palsy, and their 10-year-old Chris, who's his twin, and 13-year-old Katie. They brought them to see the Pope at the airport in Philadelphia and had this remarkable moment where Pope Francis got off the plane and got in his car to leave and then saw Michael and stopped, and he motioned to the driver, stop the car. And he went up to give Michael a blessing. And that moment really stood out to me, stood out to millions of people all over the world watched the video of this. And I knew that they were really special and people I really wanted to go back to and learn more about their lives. I didn't know at that time just how amazing they would be. The more I talked to them in the week or so afterward, the more I learned about how amazing they really were. But I knew, just seeing them at the airport, I knew it was a special family.
Well, why? Because 1,000 of people lined up to see the Pope when he was healed. Why do you think the Pope stopped that very moment and did this for a child with a physical disability?
They happen to have a unique position. Chuck, the father of Michael, he's the band director at one of the Catholic high schools in the Philadelphia area. And the archdiocese picked his high school band to play for the Pope. So the band was there. They were playing Rocky, which I, as a native Pennsylvanian, was moved by. They're playing the Rocky music. They're playing Ode to Joy as the Pope got off the plane. And so they had sort of a front row seat at that moment. And the family members are watching the band. And so they were really in Francis's line of sight.
Okay. When you actually captured that moment, because I haven't seen the video, but I did read the article, were people actually stunned that this was unexpected, or were people not surprised that this is unexpected? Because
I think it was very unexpected. Because the Pope was already in his car to leave. Everyone thought it was over, and he's driving away. And then if you watch the video, you can see him motion to his driver, hey, wait, stop. And the car stopped, and nobody expected him to get out.
So, okay. Media, as compared to the average Joe, lined up. Where were you positioned in all this chaos, to put it?
It wasn't as chaotic at that moment as you might think, because I had done this 2 days before at the New York airport at JFK, where he landed in New York, and there they had picked out about 200 parishioners from all different parts of their parishes, and they had people lined up, and it was a big crowd. What they did in Philadelphia was much smaller. It was really just the band and a handful of dignitaries like the mayor and the governor and some reporters who were watching. So the reporters were on risers right next to the band. And so that's where I was standing on these steps. And so I had, you know, a pretty good vantage point
of what was going on. What made you, out of all the reporters, want to go back and profile the family?
Well, I can say several things about that. First of all, I have a wonderful editor here, Linda Robinson, who really encouraged me to go back and learn more about this family. She was very interested, really, from the beginning in knowing more about them. I also think that the thing that stood out most to me and drew me back to thinking, you know, there's more that I want to learn about these people, was seeing the way that the three siblings interacted with each other that day on the tarmac. When I talked to them afterward, Katie, the big sister, she was, you know, she's 13 and she was surrounded by reporters and so much excitement. And she still, instead of, you know, turning her attention to the TV cameras, she kept turning back to Michael, and she was stroking his shoulder and just making sure he felt comfortable. And I was watching this and thinking, oh my gosh, these are great siblings. These are really, truly great siblings. And I knew that there was more of a family story there, and I wanted to learn more about them.
And what you said to the article is, in the article, is they were after a wheelchair-accessible van, if I'm correct. And they started a campaign on Kickstarter, and I believe the campaign is still up, and they had no luck. So after this, obviously, they had luck, but why do you think they got the moment of all moments? I mean, they had a front row seat, but obviously the Pope had a moment where he thought, okay, I better do this and I better do it now. And so why do you think they were struggling, and why do you think they decided to go, not only because of the band, but they decided to go just because of the Pope? And did they think anything was going to happen?
Well, the fundraising site certainly came later. That was one of their relative suggestions after the Pope moment and after the excitement was over. One of their relatives said, well, you know, what do you guys need? And they said, we need this van. And they put together a fundraising page. And the reaction from Washington Post readers has just been unbelievable. I've been stunned to see the donations that the families received. It's well over $125,000 donated to this CrowdRise site, and including a $50,000 donation from J.J. Abrams, the Star Wars director who we're all watching the new trailer today. It's really been amazing to see people's generosity, but I do not think that the family had that in mind before or even immediately after this moment. They really just felt the presence of this blessing in non-material terms, just in spiritual value.
So how many websites have picked this story up? I know a website that I follow, particularly Disabled Troop, picked it up, but how many websites outside the Washington Post picked it up?
Well, the initial moment with that video of Michael blessed by Pope, that was really all over the internet. And then there was my story after that that has been read by millions of people. It's been spread quite widely. But I don't know exactly where it's been or who else has been reading it. I know the volume of email I've received, I know the volume of donations has been really astounding.
Oh, my God. You're a lucky woman to capture that moment. And most people don't go back and want to interview the family. So we had this big moment decision, obviously. What did you think? Did your reporter's throat kick in, or did your kind, compassionate person's throat kick in first? Which one kicked in? I mean, what I don't get and what astounds me is we're sitting here today and I'm talking to you and everything has changed over the past couple of weeks for you, because you did a human act of kindness, if I don't say so myself. So what made you want to do a human interest story? Because a lot of reporters do a human interest story and then they don't receive, or they may not receive the feedback.
Yeah, you're right. And that's actually something that I talked quite openly with the Keating family about before the story was ever published. I told them I do these stories on a fairly frequent basis, and I never know what the reaction is going to be. I have seen times that the community reaction is well above and beyond what I ever expected when I thought I was just going to tell a story and I didn't expect much of a real-world impact. And there's been some very meaningful, very large impact. And I've also seen stories where I think, oh my gosh, this is one where people are going to be lining up to help. And in fact, there's a rather small reaction. It's hard to predict what's going to happen. And that's not the reason that we do what we do as reporters. But it's an incredible feeling when it does work out. And this one has worked for this family far beyond what I ever imagined, and beyond what they imagined too, as far as I can tell.
What is the reason why you do human why you personally do this story.
Well, I want to tell people stories. I want to be able to see what's happening in people's lives and to be able to share that with others so that they understand more of what an experience that someone might be having is like. I think that's what journalism is all about.
So, before this, getting back to your original 8-year-old career, what made you want to go into balloon art and totally switch the artistic field to journalism? Because I consider journalism an artistic field, if my listeners don't know, I vote for myself. And the moment I say that to a Washington Post reporter, God knows what's going to happen there. But I write books myself, so I do consider the art of writing art. So what made you want to transfer from one art to another?
Well, I'm very fortunate to be able to do both. I do balloon gigs just about every weekend, and I think that they really do go hand in hand when I'm sitting at my desk or even out in the field. If I'm writing all day, every day during the week, that's very different from working with my hands on the weekends and building something out of balloons. And I feel like both are very important to me, and I couldn't imagine doing one without the other.
But why was there a particular reason that drew you from the one opposite spectrum to another?
Well, I've always been drawn to balloons for as long as I can remember. I think I got my first balloon and tried to figure out how to take it apart and put it back together when I was a preschooler and started learning how to build things starting when I was about 8 and kept going and going for the past many years. And then journalism came a little later, figured out that I wanted to do that in college, but it fit in.
It did in quite nicely. And what is... Okay, now that we're talking about two opposite ends of the spectrum, balloon art and journalism, what is your two favorite things from your two completely different jobs, but yet they are the same creative thing?
So my two favorite things. I'm sorry, I don't know what the question is.
First of all, what has been your favorite story that you have done?
You know, that's such a hard question. I think one of the requirements of being a reporter is having a very short-term memory. You have to believe that whatever you're working on that day is the most interesting and the most important story. So at this moment, an editor just came up to me today and actually said he'd read my story about the Keatings, and he said, you know, this reminded me of something else and I have a new idea for you. And so I'm getting started on a new story right now that he thought of. And so at this moment, that's the most interesting story on my plate. I've never really had a favorite, and I hope I never do, because it'll mean that I'm done.
Out of the clear. So, when you're working as a reporter, what is the most challenging thing that you have to come up with? I mean, I'm sure they give you guidelines, but you have to come up with what?
I think the most challenging thing that I encounter frequently, at least, is people who aren't necessarily comfortable talking to me for some reason. There's some really hard ethical challenges that I've encountered in the past, but those fortunately are rare that you run into really difficult situations. The day-to-day challenge is just somebody who doesn't want to answer the phone or they don't feel comfortable talking to you, and you have to figure out how to convince people that you're there to tell the truth and you're there to tell the story.
Well, I appreciate that advice, because for my listeners who do not know, I send out "Hi, I'm best-selling author" to people that I think are interesting. I don't know if they'll get back to me or not. Today I got from a book reviewer, and I'm not kidding, "Laugh out loud, you're the third person that's asked me to do an interview. I'm camera, I am radio shy." So I'm like, yeah, yeah, obviously you are, because you are laughing at me because I asked you to do an interview. So if you were me, how would you approach people that don't understand my story and don't understand that we're here to do them justice and share their story? I mean, I'm sure the Keating family was a little intimidated by a strange reporter walking up to them wanting to all of a sudden interview them.
Yeah, I think one of the most amazing things about them is how open they were to the idea. When I said, hey, I want to come and I want to spend quite a bit of time with your family, they were open to that to begin with. And then the moment that really, to me, said everything about what kind of people they are in terms of sharing their experience with the world, I went to their house for the first time on a Sunday, and then said, after spending the day there, I said, hey, can I come back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. and watch you get ready for your day, which already was a pretty invasive request. And they said yes, without hesitation. And I was there the next morning, and there were, you know, Michael has a lot of medical needs, and there were some private moments. And I said to Chuck, hey, I see this is very private. Do you want me to step out of the room? And he said, if you can take it, stay until you can't take it. He basically said, I want you to see what we go through every day, and I'm not going to be the one to tell you to leave. And I felt just in awe of somebody who has that kind of strength, first of all, and was challenging me to be strong enough to get through one morning in their lives, let alone what they go through. And also very, very grateful that he was comfortable letting me really see what their experience is like.
And I am happy that you caught that moment, Julie, and I am happy that I was able to share you and the story with my listeners on Men's Women of Wisdom. And I am grateful that you responded back, or Natalie responded back to me, and we were able to do this interview. So the moment, but I wanted to talk to you about the reporter behind the story, which I think is fascinating. And for those of you who follow me on Facebook, I'll post a link to the story I'm actually referring to, so you guys can read it. And now my job is I have to go back and watch the video on YouTube, because I haven't seen, I was so fascinated by the story and I wanted to get to you that I completely forgot to watch the video. And did one of the reporters at the Washington Post take the video too, or was that someone else?
No, I believe, and I might be wrong about this, but I believe the video was recorded by a World Meeting of Families staff member who was there running the event in Philadelphia. It, that might be wrong. You should check the video credit, but I think that's who it was who recorded that.
Well, it's fascinating of where the story has gotten the family and where the story has gotten you and where the story has gotten me. I feel like I am now involved in the story because of my connection with the disability factor. I mean, I didn't realize a person could respond to me. I guess in some senses, people like what I'm doing. I don't know why, but I didn't think that I would get this opportunity of interviewing you on capturing this moment and getting behind the scenes of this story. And now, do you know where people, my listeners, could go find this Kickstarter campaign? I know you guys posted a link in the actual article, which I'll post on my Facebook, and so people can donate. I'm sure the family is still looking for donations, but do you know how people could find the Kickstarter campaign?
Yes, it's a CrowdRise campaign, and I've posted the link in the stories that I've written. I wrote the initial story that got all this attention to the campaign, and then I wrote another one about the donations coming in. And if you stay tuned, I'm planning an updated story probably for the end of this week. So the link has been posted numerous times on the Washington Post site. If you search for it, it should be easy to find.
I will go look in the website that I found it in, and I will click on the Washington Post article, and then I will not post I will post the actual link.
Wonderful.
And then I will post
thank you so much. It's just been incredible to see how generous people are in supporting the family, and I'm sure that your listeners are a part of that amazing community that I'm finding out we're a part of.
Let's hope they are. And so, as I said, I am honored that you chose to take time out of your extremely busy schedule to interview with me today and give me a sense of what this story was all about. I mean, as I said, I almost cried when I read this story, not because of the Pope factor, but because of you, because you wanted to go back and see what the pieces of the story were.
Well, I know that you have far, far more of a sense of the reality of what living with cerebral palsy is like than just about any other reader of the story. So hearing that you were moved by it, that means a tremendous amount to me, and I really appreciate you telling me that.
I was, and I have, as my listeners know by now, I have cerebral palsy. Cerebral palsy is lack of oxygen, it's really quickly figured out. And but in my case and Michael's case, I am able to verbalize my thoughts and walk with a walker. But in Michael's case, Michael could understand what you tell him with hand gestures and look to me, but he can't necessarily verbalize his thoughts. Or maybe he can with an assistive device. Did the family go into that?
They're working. One of the big things that he's working on in school right now is a system of preferences where they can say, you know, look to the right or look to the left for what he wants to express. And hopefully as he gets older, that will make it a lot easier for him to communicate, but he's still learning how to work with that right now. He's still very young.
I could do, and what you did for this family and what you did for all of us inspires people to go out there and get to the root of being compassionate to others.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. And as I said, I'll post the link everywhere on Twitter and on Facebook and on every social media I know to do with. And as I said, we had Julie from the Washington Post on with us today. And she did an incredible story, which now I have still signed, which therefore disabled Scoop picked up, which then I picked up as a radio show host myself. I didn't think she was going to get back to me, but turns out it was something that was meant to be. And as Julie said, I do understand the aspect of cerebral palsy because I live with it on a daily basis. So again, I will post the links and I will post the links and I will make sure that everyone has access to this incredible story and to this incredible child who all they did was be at the right place at the right time, and the rest happened spontaneously, as Julie said. And so I appreciate everyone tuning in to Wins Women of Wisdom. And again, I was honored to talk to Julie about this article. Thanks, you guys.